I'll take this opportunity to scratch my balls.
Lovely.
Jenny Hall! I do
Westwood.
This is Adam Virgo.
This is John Curtis.
Hi, this is Stan
Collymore. And you are listening to the V2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappin, and join me this week at Shane Leeds.
I'm back.
Yay. I'm Richard Hamilton.
Good evening.
You're good.
Oh, I've missed that good evening. I mean, wait, I've been listening to the podcast.
Of course you have. You've missed some cracking shows.
I know. Work. I'm a grown up now, and sometimes
I'm sure you've only come back actually this week because of the FIFA 48 thing.
Oh Christ! I almost forgotten about that.
So we're just going to quickly open the show with a bit of a sad news with former England manager Graham Taylor dying at the age of 72. Just a brief bit about his career, really. Taylor was a defender for Grimsby and Lincoln before becoming a manager in 1972. He had two spells with Watford and Aston Villa, where he led them both to runners-up places in the old First Division. He's a bit of a character to lose. I think he's like the first football death of the year as well.
Everybody will just, unfortunately, remember him for his not particularly great spell with England. Mm. And do I not like that quote?
Yeah.
But he was meant to be a lovely bloke, and he was a decent club manager. Like so many other managers, don't transfer that to them when they take over the national side.
He's definitely the Mr. Watford with him and Graham Taylor. Definitely Mr. Watford together, I reckon. So our thoughts with his family. Another story that's caught my eye this week. A supercomputer built by the University of Salford has been asked to predict the final Premier League table this season. They asked it to predict the outcome of every Premier League match between now and the end of the season, and the results were Chelsea win the league.
Do they really need a supercomputer to work that one out?
they calculated that.
By speak and spell, you'd probably predict Chelsea to win it right now.
Yeah, by supercomputer, it meant Dave from down the pub.
They predicted that Chelsea will win 64% of the remaining games. They predicted that Spurs will leapfrog. Sorry, I've got a bit of a cough, so I have a cough. Leapfrog Liverpool in second place. Liverpool finished third, City will finish fourth, meaning Arsenal will finish fifth and United sixth. And it's predicted that Sunderland, Swansea, and Hull will get relegated.
See, that's one of the wonderful things about football over computers, though, is that however much you predict stuff with what should happen, often it's the case that it doesn't.
If Defoe leaves, Sunderland are definitely down, I reckon. But
they're probably not getting massively wrong at the bottom of the table because it's a pretty safe bet on betting on those sides in those sort of bottom 5-6 positions, just losing the majority of their games. I can't see Arsenal finishing outside the top four, at the very least.
That's it. The moment with the, you know, you have Chelsea as then second to sixth at the moment is anybody's.
Mm, yeah, completely. And I personally don't buy anything like that because you think, it's all very well and good saying, all right, they've put it in some supercomputer, the game's left to go and they've calculated it and it's turned out like this. But what are they using to calculate why one team should be more likely to beat another one and go on runs of form? And then you've got all that other stuff of the nebulous crap like players' spirits, which can change just because one of them did something dumb one week and the manager said something about it and now they're all up in arms against it. You can't sort of calculate those kinds of things.
Or injuries and such. It's like if Diego Costa got injured tomorrow for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's simple stuff like that. It's like when they did the 1,000-year football manager sim and it turns out like Burnley and Sheffield United are the most successful clubs of all time. We could actually have 1,000 years of football, and Burnley and Sheffield United will not be the most successful clubs of all time. It just doesn't work out when you try and do it on paper football. It's on a pitch. It's like trying to work out who's going to win a war between two superpowers. chance is, it's just not going to be anything you predicted.
Yeah, they did it before the Chelsea Spurs game, and Spurs would finish third, and then he redid everything, and now Spurs are going to finish second. They did it again after the match.
Well, that's the whole point of how much they have to change each thing for one result. One result which he clearly then did not predict if it had to change that much. So that kind of leads you to wonder what we're actually putting into that computer to make it come up with these sort of numbers. It's all just a bit too bullshitty for me.
Who was that one that player that time that ended up absolutely rubbish but was meant to be like the going to be the biggest player in the world?
Freddie Adu.
That's the one.
Plays for Miami Rowdy or something now.
But he on Football Manager was going to be the best player in the world, and a lot of football teams use Football Manager even.
Yeah.
And look at him now.
Alright, so we'll start with the biggest story of the week. FIFA voted on Tuesday to expand the World Cup to 48 teams from 2026. Should we start with you, Shane?
Yeah, it's just straight up dumb. Like, I'm not even going to get into the whole FIFA is horrendously corrupt thing, because we've gone over that. I'll explain that a little bit of why they've actually made this decision afterwards. But purely in terms of the formatting, is it just doesn't make any sense. So that the whole argument is, you bring in more teams, the teams will then get better because they're playing in more competitions, therefore you have a more competitive World Cup because you have more games and more teams with stuff to lose, essentially. Okay, I can make sense of that argument. I don't personally buy into it, but I can make sense of the argument. What you decided
to put forward that argument because they clearly just thought, like, how can we try and fob this off?
it's a reasonable enough argument if you actually do everything absolutely right, which when has FIFA ever done that? But okay, you have that argument, and then you say, right, we're going to do groups of three with two teams going through, which means we can't have draws, because otherwise you might get to the last game and two teams just go, well, if we both draw, we're just going to go through, so let's just do that.
Yeah.
So draws, for one, they're out of the question. Are they gone? I know they haven't decided that yet, but they will have to, because otherwise it's just, Christ, there really will be a lot of brown.
I listened to a BBC interview with Infantino today. He was talking about either penalties or whoever's highest in the ranking will go through.
It still doesn't make any sense, because if you put it even down to the whole you're not playing extra time and all of that, so players aren't going to get more tired and things like that, just dismiss that for a second. Three games, two teams going through, one team going out. So in a group of three, majority of teams will be going through. That does not make it more competitive, that makes it less competitive. Suddenly they have to try it less hard to go through to the next stage. Sure, the stages after that, they have to try as hard to get through, because then it's whoever wins goes through, but suddenly you're just completely reducing that initial bit, which is where you get all the sort of starting hype of a World Cup, and that's where you get the development of teams start to hit a bit of form, and then there's some excitement building up about them, or one of the underdogs starts to do well, they have one or two decent games, and you can really build up sort of narratives there, and that's what people in football buy into. It's the stories of these countries, of these players. Suddenly you nuke that because you don't have that competitive anymore. I just think such a nonsensical decision in so many ways. What I think they should have done, I've said it before, I think, on the show, is Rugby World Cup style. Go to 40 teams, because I can understand the need to expand it, because I think there are more good teams at international level now. I think there's room enough for 8 more teams. But then you say, right, we're going to make it even more competitive by saying groups of 5, 2 teams go through.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's, crap, we've got to try for every single game, otherwise we're not getting through. It doesn't matter if we're France, we could be in a group with however many other good teams, we still might not get through. We have got to play every single game like it's a final. That's what would make it more competitive. What they've done is they've made it less competitive, and they've just thrown in more crap teams into the mix. You're going to end up with so many completely unbalanced groups, and it'll be so obvious immediately who's going through.
I think the thing with having the possibility of in the group stage having penalties to decide any draws is a very, it's setting it up straight away to have everybody just defending.
Yeah.
And it's
straight away when it just gets to the knockout stage, where that one side's lesser than the other, and they just put every man behind the ball for the match.
Well, this is what I'm talking about. You make it so much less competitive, because suddenly there's so much less to play for, because it would be like if in the Premier League, if no one got relegated, you just turn around and go, well, why would you ever worry about doing too badly? Yeah. If you're a manager, yeah, you're getting a bit worried you're going to lose your job. If you're a player, you're going, right, we're 20th in the league. I mean, what's the worry? Maybe one of us has a playoff to go down with the winner of the championship or something. You just completely strip away that competitiveness of, holy shit, we don't want to go out. And, oh my God, we want to go through. Because, you know, you got two chances out of you going through. And, you know, you're more than likely to end up with a bloody Egypt or a San Marino or someone just awful in your group with you. So, you know, it's probably not going to be you.
San Marino's still not going to get through.
No, but it's breathtaking how stupid they've been. And I'll explain the reason why this happened, if anyone is genuinely wondering. What Infantino is he is a student of Sepp Blatter and Platini.
Yeah.
He's their student in the sense that he comes from the Blatter School of Thought, which, and he came from Joao Havelange School of Thought, which is you don't worry about the big nations, because they're not the majority. You worry about the little nations, because they're the ones who are going to give you votes. So when you're... That's why I went to 32 teams in the first place, because it was about getting the votes of the smaller nations, because they wanted to be in World Cups, because when they're in World Cups, they get more money for their national sides, and so on and so on and so on. And then
Burkina Faso has the same amount of votes as Germany, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so if you appeal to the small sides by saying, look, you can get more places in here if you vote for me, and if you keep voting me, I'm going to keep doing this kind of thing, then you've obviously got that appeal there.
Have you heard the conspiracy theory?
They call it the football development philosophy, which is utter bullshit, because it's about saying, oh, we invest in football in developing nations, and it's about, you know, bringing these countries up. No, it's entirely political. It's about securing votes and about securing money, and then we all know how that ends in FIFA.
The conspiracy theory is that they want to get India and or China into the World Cup, so they'll make more money.
Of course they do. They're looking at it in the same way that a lot of businesses worldwide are looking at just about anything. They're going, we've got 7 billion people on Earth, and around 2 billion of them are consumers. You know, they buy laptops, they buy phones, and all that lot. So let's try and get the other 5 billion.
2 billion of them live in two countries.
Yeah, try and get them involved, and that way they'll get into football, they'll start playing it more, and then there'll be more money because they'll start wanting to watch it, and the TV revenues will go up, and blah, 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 blah. Money, 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 money. Votes, 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 votes. Football is the last fucking thought they have. Seriously.
So how do you think they're going to divvy up the 16 places? Apparently UEFA said they want at least 3. And the South Americans want 2. That means 7 will go through. That's a 10.
I can see them giving at least 1 or 2 spaces to Europe and at least 1 or 2 spaces to South America. In fairness, I do think even though there's very few teams in South America, there's always at least one team in South America that is good enough to be at the World Cup and doesn't get through.
Okay. I might get another one.
Most recently being like Paraguay.
What's the point of having qualifying if 7 out of 10 are going to go through?
Yeah, you do lose that element of competitiveness there. But what it's going to do is they're not going to, again, worry too much about South America and Europe because we only have about a third of the voting power.
Yeah.
They're going to think Caribbean and North America. So North America will get more. Africa will get the bulk. And Asia will get some. So you're probably looking at maybe at most 4 going to Europe and South America. And the rest will be divvied up with Africa getting, I don't know, maybe 5. North America getting probably 3. And Asia taking the rest.
Australasia will get S place automatically. So New Zealand will get through every time.
It is utter madness from any kind of footballing point of view, because I can understand the wanting to expand the World Cup, and I don't think it is inherently a bad idea to expand the World Cup, but there are ways of doing it where even if you are looking at the money or the politics, you can still make it a good tournament. Not necessarily a better one, not necessarily a worse one, you can still make it a good tournament. The way they've structured this is just the least practical way of doing it. It is astonishing how they've come to this realisation that we should do teams of, oh my god, groups of 3 is mad. It doesn't make sense. Do a 40-team World Cup with groups of 5. Or do it into groups of 6 and do... Oh, my, no, I'm so annoyed.
We'll move on from that to the first rounds on the pitch. Right, so... Oh, God. Should have done something beforehand. All right, so, Richard, you'll go first.
Okay.
So it's got to be 2 points for correct answer, and if Richard gets it wrong, I'll give you a chance to get the question, Shane.
Sick.
So here I am. All 4 nations played at the 1958 World Cup, but where was it held?
Let me work my way backwards. So 66 was England. So that means 62 was... not in Europe, so, and then 58 was... That was the one Sweden lost to Brazil.
Bollocks.
Oh, so it was in Sweden.
Yes. Alright. Still with Hero. So, which city has the most clubs competing in its country's top division? London or Moscow?
Wow, so how many have we got from London? We've got Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, West Ham.
I've not included Watford.
No. Palace. So five. Any of us more from London? Moscow Club, Spartak, CSKA. I'm guessing there's going to be some more.
That's a tough one.
Dynamo, Locomotive. I'm going to say London.
Yes, London. London have five and Moscow have four. You did? Yeah. So, how many of the 20 clubs in the MLS are based in Canada?
Is this mine still?
Yeah, all these are your questions.
I really don't have a clue on this. I'm going to take a stab in the dark at two.
No. Shane, your bonus point?
It's three,
yeah. So you got Montreal Impact, Toronto FC, and Vancouver Whitecaps.
You have not been playing enough Football Manager, Richard.
Shane gets a bonus point.
No.
Right, so this is your fourth and last question, but it's worth 2 points. So, name the two English players that have played for Lazio.
Gazza.
Yeah.
And Lavell Morrison.
Yes. Well done.
Wow. Two players who are the epitome of professionals.
Right, so we'll do Shane's round after the transfer portion. Right, so after the first round, Hero has six and Shane has one. Right. So a bit of a quiet week on the transfer front. I think I could only see one or two.
Well, there's been a couple of big things today.
Something happened since I got home from work and I haven't seen it. I've got Morgan Schneiderlin. Schneiderlin's joined Everton for 22 million.
What's 22?
22, going up to 24.
Morgan, well, I was a United fan, I wouldn't be disappointed with seeing Schneiderlin leave. One, you've recouped most of your fee, and yes, I know, in football, you have to include the wages he had and the agent's fees and all that lot, so they've probably made a loss, probably no more than, say, 8 million, probably a bit less than that. So that's not bad for, you know, a sort of top level club in terms of a loss on that one. And he's not really, you have to look at it in a simple way. One, he hasn't played much of a role already. Two, he's not likely to play much of a role in the future. Therefore, if you cut your losses pretty effectively, it's a good business decision and footballing decision, because what's the point in having £24 million worth of player sitting on the bench when you could have that money and potentially spend that money on someone better? I also think with Schneiderlin, he was never a top-level player. He was always good. He was good for Southampton. And the reason he was good for Southampton is because we made him the central locus of that team. Everything revolved around Schneiderlin. Came to the year before he left, we started to sort of make that role he had less important. Hmm. Played a different way, so that it wasn't going for him all the time. And suddenly he started to look less important, less impressive on that pitch. Suddenly he didn't look like he was that top-level player. And he went to United, and he's not going to be made the main man at United, is he, more than Schneiderlin? And so it was the same kind of thing. Whenever he was on the pitch, he just didn't look quite so important because his role wasn't so important. At Everton, I think he could get back to what he was at Southampton. That's possible. But also, you've got to consider the kind of destabilising effect it can have on your footballing brain to go from a club like Man United where you think, right, I've made it. I'm at one of the top level clubs. I can be one of the best midfielders in the world if I work hard. And then just, 1 year later, it all falls apart. I mean, maybe you turn up to a club like Everton and think, this isn't United. Do I care as much? Or maybe you get there and you're just a bit lethargic. It can go either way. You might turn up there now and be like, right, time to get my career back on track and work really hard. But at the same time, there's a lot of players who've been in the exact same situation who've just never recovered from moving from a big club like that, especially not when they've still got enough of a career ahead of them. Like when they're older, you know, 32, 33, maybe they can recover from it because they're still looking at it 1 year at a time. With Schneiderlin, he's 27. He's probably thinking to himself, I'm never getting an opportunity like that again. And I blew it. And now I've got, Everton? I mean, if it's any of us, we'd go, Christ, we'd kill to play for any of these teams. But for a top level footballer like that, you have to wonder how he's going to mentally adjust. And I think those first few games will really kind of show whether or not he's throwing himself into it properly.
Yeah, I think you sort of compare, like, him and Herrera came around the same time to United.
Yeah.
And, like, Herrera is never going to be sort of a big name player at United. He does his job, and he does it well. But Schneiderlin could have pushed for that role.
That's it. I was quite excited when he joined. I thought he could have been the next the player in midfield we've been looking for to replace. We haven't replaced Keane.
He just never sort of grasped his chance, did he? Well, you see Herrera come into the team, and he puts 100% in every game.
I think if Schneiderlin isn't the centre of the team, I think he loses his concentration. If he hasn't got everyone revolving around him, he isn't quite as on it as if, you know, as when he's just one player amongst a unit. I don't think he likes that role. I think you have to have a team go around him, and that's the same reason I don't think he's going to succeed at Everton, because Everton play a much more team-based game. It's a weird one, I think. Schneiderlin going to Everton, to Koeman, where under him, that was when his role became the least important he'd ever been. So I think that it's a bit of an odd one, I think.
I'm not overly a fan of, like, the sort of the Snapchat, Instagram generation of footballers that sort of Arsenal sort of started with, and now United have very much become.
Yeah.
Like,
but there's certain players at United that you always see just sort of being friends with each other. And Schneiderlin never seemed to appear in any photos. He just didn't seem to bond with anyone.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed it till now. I was thinking about it.
Yeah, like, when you see, like Matt will do some photos, and he'll always have his Spanish friends of Herrera and De Gea in there. Pogba will be doing ones of Ibra and Lingard in there. But you never saw Schneiderlin in anybody's photos. And you think, did he actually ever make friends and try and, like, become part of the team?
I know you've got a lot of big players at United in terms of being big personalities, big egos, but Schneiderlin is the kind of player, and we saw it at Southampton. He thinks, for one thing, he's a lot better than he is, and he wants to be the centre of attention. He wants to be the big guy, but you can maybe get away with that at Southampton, where maybe there's only one or two other players on your level. You're not going to be able to do that at United, because they're just going to look at you like,
yeah, you're not going to do that.
Hang on a second.
Richard Pogba there, are you?
You can't turn around and be like, I'm, you know, all that, or, you know, just sort of act a bit arrogant, maybe not think you need to talk to people, or, you know, really get involved in the whole team thing, because, you know, you think you're that good. You've got to be able to invest in it. It doesn't matter if you're like Ibra or Pogba. And even them, they've understood it. That part of being that big player is you're pulling everyone together around you. You're making friends almost. It's such a simple thing, but I think it's something Schneiderlin has always had that reputation of. He doesn't integrate too well. Even at Southampton, despite the years he was there, it was exactly the same kind of situation. You knew the players there who were friends of each other, and you knew the ones who weren't, and Schneiderlin was just never even involved. He was just absent permanently from all of that.
Alright, Anthony wanted us to mention that Cleverley's went to Watford on loan.
Yeah, we mentioned it, we can move on.
Alright, so we'll go on to West Ham manager Slaven Bilic. Says forward and Payet no longer wants to play for the club, but he doesn't want to sell him.
Well, they've already turned down a bid, haven't they, this afternoon?
From
Marseille to return there.
Yeah. Well, they've considered bought him for 10, 19 for him. It's quite a decent return for a 29-year-old.
29-year-old who, you know, pretty much is, you know, could potentially just end up being a one-season wonder in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd take that. If I was at Southampton, I'd think if we got about 20 million for him, that's probably about right. He's 29 years old, he's good, and on his day, he is unplayable. But at the same time, for West Ham, you get 20 million, you can buy another player who will be maybe not as such a one-man machine at times, but you can buy a player who will be able to be instrumental to what you're trying to do as a team. You can do that with 20 million.
Yeah.
And he's been so off the boil this year. It's clear he's wanted to leave for a while now. You can't keep toxic players in your squad. eventually it all goes bad. It's okay if you maybe got, and this is I think a comparable example because they're having at the same time, someone like Jose Font, where he's not throwing it around the dressing room and he's not going out and, you know, talking to the press constantly, whereas by and large being held behind the scenes because, you know, they're professionals.
Mm.
But when you've got someone who's throwing his weight around in the press, getting his agent to go out there and say things, you can tell he's doing it in the dressing room as well. And that's one of those things that's worrying. And if you're West Ham and you're thinking, we could potentially go down, you don't want anything that could potentially poison the well. Everything has to be completely above board. Everything in terms of morale has to be completely above board. And if you're keeping a player like that in there, especially when you've got £20 million bids coming in, you're not making the right decisions, as far as I'm concerned.
The fact as well that he's come out and said that he is not going, he doesn't want to play for the team at all again now until he's gone.
Yeah, and if it's the same situation with a couple of players we had at Southampton. It was the same with Lallana. When he came out and said that, we were just like, yeah, all right, piss off then. Go on. Out you go. We don't want you anymore if you're going to be like that. It doesn't matter how long you've been or how important you are to the fans. If you refuse to play for your club, that's it. Your relationship with the fans is dead. So as far as I'm concerned, they should just kick him out. It's borderline. It's completely unprofessional, isn't it?
Well, I think it shows completely to the opposite of somebody like Schweinsteiger.
Yeah.
Who was forced to train alone for the first 3 months of the season, and has just remained constantly professional about it. You know, constantly on Twitter and Instagram, he's still going on about, you know, go on lads, you go and win it. As soon as he gets an opportunity to train with the team, he's trying to cheer them on in that, and it just shows the difference between some players.
It's that level of professionalism. There's a way you can leave a club, including handing in a transfer request, where you can leave dignified. I think that's the route Font's going. I don't think any Southampton fan is going to really begrudge him that when he does, or if he does eventually move, because he's not handled it in a way where he's gone like the way of Lovren did, where it's just, I'm never playing for this club again, you let me leave now, or there's going to be hell to pay, and so I'll piss off, mate. It's just really nothing special.
What's got photos of the Southampton manager doing golden showers or something?
Oh, Christ, I don't know. I mean, there's a good way to leave a club and there's a bad way to leave a club. And every single team has those examples of the ones that went well and the ones that went badly. And you look at Payet, in 2 years, are they going to remember him as a player who went well or a player who went badly? It's a player who went badly. So just kick him out now. Get rid of him, get your 20 million, buy a very good player with that money.
The thing is, well, selling to Marseille, who cares about somebody going off to Marseille?
Yeah, he's not going to be a rival at all there, is he? He's not going to have any impact on what's happening. Maybe if they're saying it's a Premier League club coming in with a bid, all right, we hold out for a bit more because he could potentially cost us things.
Yeah.
If he drives that club forward and they're one of our rivals, or if he's going to be playing against us and potentially scoring goals against us, maybe we want a little bit more money, so maybe we'll hold out a bit more. But selling him abroad, just get rid of him. He's nothing special.
There's a couple of gossips that have caught my eye. Bournemouth have made inquiries about John Terry on loan till the end of the season. Could we see that happening?
It's an interesting one because you got Chelsea are clearly looking at still bringing in other players, and they've got Zouma like training again and
Zouma's back training. They brought Aki back, haven't they?
And obviously Aki back. Depending upon what position he's playing, because he's been touted at pretty much every position apart from goalkeeper that he can play for. Like John Terry, though, he is just Chelsea, isn't he?
Mm.
Yeah, he's Mr. Chelsea.
So would he want to leave for first team, or would he just prefer to just help out in the dressing room?
It's one of those transfers that makes absolutely perfect sense if it wasn't John Terry. Literally any other player who is exactly the same as John Terry, but without John Terry's name or history, it makes perfect sense for his move.
I think if Chelsea were having the type of season they were last season, I think he wants to be there to pick the cup up at the end of the season. Even if he's not playing, he's still club captain, isn't he? So.
Well, also, he's also probably thinking to himself, I didn't want to retire last season because, Christ, I don't want to go out on that kind of low. But if we were in the league this season, even if I've not played amazingly, it's going to be a great send-off. Doesn't matter if he's played 5 games or 30, it's going to be a hell of a send-off if they go and win the league, and he can say at the end of it, right, Chelsea's in a good place again, I can go now.
Yeah.
He's going to be thinking that. You don't play for one club your entire life and not think about how you're going to exit it. So that's going to be forefront in his mind.
Right, I picked the next one more for just to hear Shane laugh. So Barcelona, Juventus, and PSG are all interested in Liverpool's Adam Lallana.
I'm not even going to justify that with a laugh. That's just bollocks. You see, I couldn't even understand. There are literally 50 attacking midfielders better than him in the world.
Yeah.
Why? That is one of those things where he's in decent form, and oh, he's playing under Klopp, and he's a European-style manager, and we need to fill the paper with something today because nothing's happening in the transfer window. So maybe Lallana leaves, some Liverpool fans will get worried. Maybe he'll go on Twitter, maybe it'll turn into a big story and we'll get some clicks. Barcelona, Adam Lallana. Henderson would be better for Barcelona than Adam Lallana. I don't care at all about Henderson. That's not just me being anti-Lallana, even though I bloody well am. That's just, it's just bollocks.
Coutinho would be gone before Lallana from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, if that news story was these clubs interested in Coutinho, yeah, that makes absolutely perfect sense. He's better than that club is. I mean, no offence, Liverpool fans, in terms of the ability of the rest of your squad, he's much better than any other player you have. That's all I meant. And the other thing I meant as well, but we're not saying that.
Alright, so we'll move on to the second round of some of the pitch. So it's Shane. So same rules again, 2 points for a. You have the question right, and then Hero can go for a bonus point if you get it wrong. So, Shane.
Hi.
Who were the last French club to play in the Champions League final? Oh, sorry.
Oh, Christ. I imagine it's got to be one of two teams. I mean, actually, no, they were all quite bad recently, weren't they? I'm thinking either Monaco or PSG, but they're all pretty awful. Monaco. They were better for them.
Yes.
Monaco.
2004, oh. Monaco. Yeah.
Was that Mourinho in Porto?
Yeah.
Ah.
Alright. In which of these countries would you find the home of FC Santa Claus? Finland or Norway?
That's a trick question. That's not a real thing.
No, it is for them.
It's a real thing, yeah.
Finland or Norway? The Norwegians aren't that stupid and their league isn't that bad. Finland,
yeah.
I was thinking they've got like Rosenborg, they don't need a novelty club.
Alright, how many times have Chile won the Copa America?
I really am tempted to say once here, but that's probably not true. No, I swear they won it in like the 60s or something. I watched the bloody final, I should know this. I'm going to go with two.
Yes, they won it in 2015 and 2016.
Oh, right.
They played it to four finals. No, they've been runners-up four times. Alright, so it's a draw at the moment. So your two-pointer. Which two clubs were the most represented at Euro 16 with 12 players each?
So I've got to say both clubs?
Yeah, for 1 point each.
Okay. Is this just Premier League or is this every?
Yeah, it's European.
Okay.
I don't get it.
Oh, shit. Liverpool had a lot of England players. I know that. Logical. England had a lot of Liverpool players, so Liverpool.
Liverpool's one, and, yeah.
Okay. Alright. So I can't lose. Excellent.
Well, if you get it wrong and then Hero gets it right,
I'm probably going to go with a curveball here, mainly because it was their entire defence was made up from this team, but Juventus.
Ah, yes. Congratulations, Shane.
Yay! All I was thinking was Buffon, Barzagli, Cellini, Bonucci. It's like the entire Italy team was Juve.
So you... Yeah, Spurs were one behind, weren't they? They weren't far off.
Yeah.
It's a title-winning return to the VT Football Podcast.
I think, yeah. So congratulations, Shane, on this week's summer pitch. Right, so on Saturday, the African Cup of Nations starts with host Gabon against Guinea-Bissau. You looking forward to the tournament?
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to watch so many games.
Have you been sarcastic there?
Entirely. I might watch, I don't know, like semi-finals and finals, but I mean, the starting game kind of epitomises it, doesn't it? Gabon v Guinea-Bissau, which is like a shit Portugal, isn't it?
I don't know. Like, obviously, there's quite a few utter gash nations in the African sort of for their version of our European championship.
Well, two of the biggest countries didn't make it. Nigeria didn't make it, and South Africa didn't make it. Libya are meant to host it, but they
better players though from Africa nowadays.
Okay, I can agree with that. There's better individual players knocking about, but I think the state of African football in terms of the countries has gotten worse. I think there's just, okay, you look at like the Nigeria team compared to say previous Nigerian teams, or the Ghana team compared to previous Ghana teams, relative to where the rest of the world was at the same time. I do think they've genuinely gotten quite a lot worse. You can't think of a single African team these days and you think they could possibly make it to the quarterfinals of a World Cup. Possibly. You can't think anyone's really convincing.
I'd say Ivory Coast have a chance.
Okay, apart from that PSG guy, name a single one of their back line. And apart from, what's his name, your one?
What, Eric Bailly?
Yeah. Name any other Ivory Coast defender.
Traore.
Who the bloody hell is that?
Cool.
And there's...
Well, are you just saying an Ivory Coast name, Traore?
Well, there's one of the best defensive... Well, so he's defensive midfield, sort of box-to-box midfield, who's hugely fought sort of in Italy at the moment, Frank Kessi.
Oh, yeah, but he's like 20, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's like the new Torre.
I just think it's not being harsh, because you look at like the comparative example of Asian football, which is going from better to better. Like anything from Japan to Australia, even South Korea, these teams are getting better. I think African football is just sort of, it's stood really still. It hasn't seen any considerable improvements in terms of the way they're developing an entire team and the way they're developing a team ethos. Like, you always have it at a World Cup, there's some pay dispute with one African team and their players. And it's just always so top-heavy. There's so many forwards and wingers and barely any good central midfielders or defenders. They've still not progressed to get that balance.
That's improved of late. I think defensively, because we're going to be discussing sort of a best ever African side. And I think defensively, African players have really improved over the last few years. You're starting to see a lot of big name clubs buying African defenders now, where you'd never see African defenders at clubs. Be few and far between. But, you know, you look at the strikers over the years from Africa, and they've always been quite top draw.
I mean, I'm not arguing with the whole perspective. Individual players have got better. I think the teams have gotten worse. I just think there aren't any what you would call good African teams. I don't think that's being harsh, because I would say there are good Asian teams. There are good, even Caribbean teams. Jamaica are bloody bad. You look at the way football's gone in Africa, and you always have to say relatively to the rest of the world and the way the rest of the world's football's improved, they've stood still. Those teams have still not developed to the point where they aren't anything other than just attacking forces, or they're not really teams. They're like England. They're just celebrating together when they get to a tournament, and then there's always some problem. They've still not got past that point, and you kind of have to wonder why. At this point, they should have been able to develop further than that, because Africa, as a continent,
have
the whole
a club game, do they, in Africa?
No, but they in terms of sort of, you look at how a national team develops, it always comes from the government, essentially. They put the funding towards football associations, and they at least can get the players into the foreign countries where they can go on and improve. But the problem is, you've got this massive imbalance now. There's more money in Africa than there's ever been. There's more development in Africa than there's ever been. Industry's getting better. It's all improving. They haven't actually changed any method of governance or in terms of organising their national football teams. So it's all stayed pretty much the same on that path. So it's just one of those things where the whole improvement that's been made in football worldwide and the improvement that's being made in Africa has not actually got to the level that really matters, which is the football associations. Because if they aren't organised, if they aren't actually doing their job properly, you will not have a successful national team. Case in point, England. we've had good players for years. Maybe not the best, but we've had good players that could have done a hell of a lot better than we've continuously done. What's been wrong? It's our governance. That's the central point, which means we hire shit managers, and that when those managers do not make good decisions regarding what we're going to do with the team, and there's no actual downward mobility between what we're trying to do as an idea, it's the same exact situation, I think, in Africa, and that's what they really need to start improving. If they're actually going to have good teams, because you can have you know, your Aubameyangs, your Eric Bailly's, all of these players, you can have them. Africa's always had those players, but you'll never actually do anything as a team if you never really tried to develop the whole thing. I think that's why I think Africa's stagnated, and it's why I'm really not looking forward to this tournament, because it's just going to turn into a real shitfest of low quality, not for players, for teams.
Do you want to hear some odds? the reigning champions, Ivory Coast, are 7-2 to win again. Senegal are second favourites, 5-1. Seven-time champions, Egypt, are 7-1, along with Cameroon, Algeria, and Ghana, are all 7-1 as well. The hosts we go on are 8-1. So, who do you think are going to win? Could there be a shock? Or?
I think Senegal can do it. They got a pretty decent team, all things considered, relative to the other teams. They're probably the one that's best rounded in terms of having players all over the pitch. So I think, yeah, they could probably do it. It's been a while for them, I think, as well.
Not Togo.
My money's on Ivory Coast.
Wow, that's a safe bet. I suppose that's a bit like me going for Ukraine in the Euros.
Well, Togo have got Adebayor else in retirement to lead their line. So. Tongo, sorry.
Senegal, though, they have got quite a tasty forward line.
Yeah.
You know, they've got Mane, Sow, and Keita Baldi from Lazio.
Yeah, no, they've got a lot of good players. You've even got like likes of Diouf. I think Demba Ba's still knocking about, it, isn't he, in their first team? You've got like Koulibaly, what's the other ones? Kouyaté, Gay. I think they've got the best all-round team. And that's what it's kind of point I was making about Ivory Coast. I think defensively, they've got some good players, but they're players who really need organisers around them. And I just don't think they're going to have that.
All right, so over the next 3 weeks, we're going to pick our African All-Star 11. And we're going to... So that tonight, we're going to go with our goalkeeper and our defence. And we've decided to go for a 3-4-3 formation. So, so who should be our goalkeeper? Who should...
probably, I know he's not doing a lot at the moment, but Mandanda was good for years. No, he's French. That was stupid. that is up there. Oh, what a start. That's up there with what's his name saying he thinks Wes Morgan should play for England. Who was I thinking of? I was thinking of Enyema. What am I doing? What's wrong with my brain?
Well, I went with Grabalar because he's won the English top divisions 6 times. He's won the FA Cup 3 times, League Cup 3 times, and the European Cup. So, in terms of an African goalkeeper, nobody else has won more.
I merely just didn't think of him because he was white. Hey, that's South Africa for you.
Zimbabwe.
I'm going for the Egyptian one. El Hadri.
El Hadri, yeah. Yeah, he's won the African Cup of Nations 4 times.
But Enyema, he was pretty decent.
Right, so who are we going to go for then?
I'd say yours, Grobbelaar, to be honest, of any.
Yeah.
Let's go Grobbelaar.
And you know, to be in the top flight of the English league at the time when the English league was, you know, Liverpool were the best side in the world at the time. He was the goalkeeper for them. You know, how many top flight trophies did he win?
He won the league 6 times. He won the FA Cup 3 times, League Cup 3 times, and the European Cup.
Can't argue with that, can you?
I'm also just going to say I'm not a total retard. Grobbelaar was born in South Africa.
All right, so who do you want to get?
I loved with Grobbelaar as well, just his style of play. You know, he was like Manuel Neuer before Neuer came about.
Yeah, he wasn't your typical 80s goalkeeper, was he?
No, he was just mental. he was like when you suddenly, you're winning at FIFA and it's the 89th minute, so you think, oh, I know what, my goalkeeper will try and score now.
Oh, it's like when you play online, you play online and the goalkeeper just keeps throwing it down and trying to run up the pitch of it. You're like, ah.
Some of that was possibly due to the fact that he may have been taking a few under-the-counter deals. He seems to have come out since, allegedly.
Allegedly.
I mean, just just to put that in there.
No one with that moustache is completely clean.
Alright, so we've got three defenders to go for. Harry?
I'll go first with Lucas Vadeby.
Yeah, he's on my list as well.
That's a good shout. That's a very good
shout. He was just quality for Leeds back in the day.
He also won the African Cup of Nations once. Oh, God. He probably would have got in my 90s Premier League 11, possibly.
One of you lot go now.
I went with Lauren. He's won the African Cup of Nations twice. He's won the Olympics once. He won the Premier League twice. FA Cup four times. He was the 2000 African Cup of Nations player of the tournament. I know he was like a right back, but he can play on the right side of three, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we're caring too much about the positions. If, you know, if it was three left backs, they were the greatest ever, I'd still go with them.
You want to pick the third one then, Shane?
The only one I can think of in my head is Song. I mean, he was the one who had the misfortune of getting sent off against France, wasn't he? Mm. He was always pretty top draw, wasn't he?
Yeah, I like Riddabert Song. Yeah. Yeah.
The thing is, like, nowadays, this is like I was saying before, we're starting to see actual real quality defenders coming through from Africa, like the one at Napoli, and obviously Eric Bailly at United. I think there's others as well. There's the one at Bayern Munich. At the moment,
who?
I can't think of his name. Let me find.
I'll give Africa this in terms of their general misfortune. A lot of the very good African players end up playing in Europe. They've got that really going against them. They should have Jerome Boateng, but unfortunately, he did not pick Ghana.
Well, next week I think it's going to be really hard. So we're picking the three strikers next week, so I think we'll probably spend the whole end of the show just doing the free strikers, because they've had lots of brilliant strikers over the years. Alright, so just for a reminder, we went for Bruce Grabelaar on goal, Lauren, Lucas Radebe, and Riddabert Song as our all-star African 11.
I like how with two Man United fans on this show, there's a Leeds player, a Liverpool player, and an Arsenal player all in there. I think that's quite special. Well done, guys.
Grabelaar's in there by default.
I wasn't picking Quinton Fortune.
Was he even? I swear he was French.
No, he's South African.
Is that a shame, that comment? Oh, I swear he was a shame.
No, you're South African as well, Quinton Fortune.
Fortune just sounds French. I'm having a mare today.
He can play as both midfielder and defender.
He's not going to make it into the midfield. I've had loads of brilliant midfielders over the years. Alright, so if there's nothing else, check out our website at v2football.com, where you can find our recent Q&As with Rangers coach Kevin Storey and Arsenal legend Kenny Sampson. Plus an interview I did with former Chelsea midfielder Damien Matthew. And you can always see our other shows. The 70 show this week had former Bury and Wigan midfielder Jason Charis on to discuss his career and review the FA Cup third round. Also check out the Arsenal Premier League podcast every Sunday, and follow us on Twitter at V2Football and like us on Facebook. Good night.